Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick, and we're back with part two of our series about the legendary Irish hero Finn McCool. If you haven't heard part one, you should go back and listen to that one first. This one will make a lot more sense if you do. But at the end of the last episode, we promised you that this episode would be the one that's all thumb, because, of course, one of the great legends about Finn McCool is the so-called thumb of knowledge. We teased it a few times in the previous episode, but now we're finally here. We're finally to the thumb factory.
That's right. Finn is not merely a warrior and a hunter and a defender of his people. He also has the gift of divination. His prescience puts him in keeping with the likes of Paul Atreides, but he doesn't take spice or enter a prana bindu trance in order to see the future, or as it's sometimes described, to gain wisdom. Instead, he puts his thumb in his mouth.
It's the most heroic thing I can picture. I mean, imagine the movie poster. It's like your action movie hero. They've got the sword. Their hair is blowing in the wind. Maybe their armor is splattered with blood and mud. And also, he's just got his thumb in his mouth. Now, in the last part of the series, we referenced a few works by a scholar named James MacKillop, who has written extensively on Finn McCool and on Irish myth and legend. For example, I cited him when I was talking about the version of the Giant's Causeway story that involves the Ben and Donner giant, the rival giant, being replaced with one named Cú Chulainn, which is totally confusing because that's the name of a different Irish folk hero. But this was also the version of the story where Finn McCool bites off the rival giant's finger when the giant is tricked into putting the finger into his mouth. But I think you were also reading something by James MacKillop on the origins of this thumb story, right?
Yeah. According to MacKillop, the details on how the thumb is utilized vary according to the different tellings. Sometimes it's described as a sucking of the thumb, much like an infant would suck on a thumb or fingers. Other times it's described as a chewing of the thumb. Mm. And sometimes it's specifically said that the thumb is placed behind the upper teeth. which I guess is something that is more or less happening with any kind of a infantile sucking of the thumb anyway. But they seem to make sometimes the point is made that it's like the thumb is coming into contact with the palate and pressing.
All right. So as amusing as the image of an action hero sucking his thumb might be, the idea of an action hero biting his thumb, that's pretty close, but that seems a little more maybe on the money, especially when you take into account some historical considerations, because the idea of biting his thumb immediately made me think of the classically confusing scene from Shakespeare, the infamous "Do you bite your thumb at us, sir?" The scene from Romeo and Juliet. Rob, do you remember coming across this in school and having no idea what to make of it?
Yes, I distinctly remember this, probably when we were watching an adaptation of it. There's the whole scene with I bite my thumb at you, and I remember everyone getting a real kick out of that.
Yeah, it's like, it's one of those where you know what it means, but you don't know what it means. Like, you get the gist, but you don't understand what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. The scene, for anybody who hasn't read it, it's in Romeo and Juliet, Act 1, Scene 1. We get servants of the two rival houses, the Montagues and the Capulets. They run into each other in the street, and they're trying to stir things up. They're trying to provoke a fight because they hate each other. And so a character from one house says, "Do you bite your thumb at us, sir?" And the guy from the other house says, "I do bite my thumb, sir." "Do you bite your thumb at us, sir?" And then the guy who's biting his thumb leans aside to his friend, and he says, "Is the law on our side if I say I?" And his friend says, "No, it is not." So he says, "No, sir, I do not bite my thumb at you, sir, but I bite my thumb, sir." So it's sort of like, I'm just punching the air, and if you happen to walk into the air that I'm punching, you know, so be it. I think the implication is that if he says outright that he is biting his thumb at the other guy, then if a fight breaks out, it'll be considered his fault because he provoked it. Mm-hmm. So he's just saying, "No, I'm just biting my thumb in general."
All right. Makes sense. It's kind of like if there's a difference between flashing the middle finger and making a middle finger and scratching your face. You have plausible deniability and saying, "Oh, no, I wasn't flipping you off. The side of my face itches and I needed to relieve it. And my middle finger is my longest finger, and therefore it is the ideal finger to use for scratching said nose."
Right. Oh, it's itching again. Oh, here I go again.
Oh, now both sides are itching. Yeah.
That is clearly what's going on in the scene, but it is interesting to ponder, like, what is the origin of this thumb biting thing? Because, of course, this was localized to specific cultures, but it's clear what it means in context. It seems to bite one's thumb at someone was a gesture of disrespect or contempt. It was kind of like giving the finger. It was a way of saying you stink. Mm-hmm. And in trying to find something about the origins of this gesture, I found an excerpt from a book called How to Behave Badly in Elizabethan England by a British historian named Ruth Goodman. And she writes as follows, quote, "In modern Sicily, you can still see a form of this gesture in use. An upright thumb held so that the pad points outwards is tucked behind the top front teeth and then flicked forwards out of the mouth towards the intended insultee." Okay, so are you picturing that? It's not the thumb going straight into the mouth, as you might think with, like, mm-hmm. When a child is sucking their thumb. Instead, it's like the thumb kind of goes upward into the mouth behind the top teeth, and then you kind of flick the thumb out, pad out.
Yeah.
But then Goodman also writes, "I have also seen a version in action on the outskirts of Venice, although I don't know if it was a native Venetian performing it, where the pad of the thumb was placed horizontally between the top and bottom teeth in a bite and then flicked out, rotating as it went so that the bitten pad was thrust forwards." And so because of the Finn McCool biting the thumb thing, I started to wonder if there were any interesting connections between this gesture we see in Shakespeare that appears to have mostly gone out of style today, though maybe you might still see it in isolated cases here or there, such as in Sicily or somewhere in Italy. But I'm going to have to say that for me, this investigation was a failure. I couldn't find any evidence of a connection between these two story elements, though it did raise interesting questions on its own, like where would this type of thumb biting gesture come from? And from what I turned up, like many obscene gestures, its origins are unknown, but I did find a book that had some interesting informed guesses. And this was in an academic book called Historical Social Psychology by Kenneth Gergen and Mary Gergen, published by Taylor and Francis, 2014. And so first of all, they dispense with a few alternatives. They say, well, maybe the thumb biting insult gesture has something to do with thumb sucking, but that doesn't really fit what's described in the Shakespearean usage. And they say the same goes for the act of biting the knuckle of your thumb, which is a gesture that sometimes people still use today, but it seems to demean something different. Biting the knuckle of your thumb seems to denote someone desperately trying to contain rage. And that also, it also just doesn't fit what's described in these sources. So instead, they argue that the thumb biting described by Shakespeare is something that has generally fallen out of fashion today. It's mostly not used anymore. And that in order to understand it, we would need to look to the historical context. So what's the context? Well, I thought their answer was pretty interesting. They write, quote, "The clue, it seems, is to be found in the fact that during the latter half of the 16th century, men were in the habit of wearing gloves, and these were usually removed prior to any confrontation, not unlike the present-day Irish habit of taking off one's jacket to show that one means business. In fact, the practice of removing and throwing down one's glove had become ritualized as a challenge long before Shakespeare's time, and it is common knowledge that medieval knights used this device to invite each other into the lists. It seems likely that the medieval convention, or some version of it, was still around in a stylized form during Shakespeare's time, but it had become abbreviated to the point where an intention movement of removing one's gloves would suffice." So, how does an early modern hater remove a glove? Well, one way would be to remove it with the opposite hand, but another way would be to bite at one of the fingers of the glove with your teeth and then pull the hand away from inside. You've probably seen people take gloves off this way. The latter method, they claim, is well attested, and it was not unusual to remove a glove this way, by biting the thumb and pulling the hand out. Though, when I was trying to imagine doing this myself to just sort of give it a quick thought experiment check, I think you probably can do it, though it seems to me it'd be easier to get your hand out of the glove by biting one of the long fingers than by biting the thumb, but I'm no glove expert.
Well, this makes sense. Yeah, the gloves are off. This is the, you know, the classic challenge. And I had to, we had to check this with Seth, whose Simpsons knowledge knows no bounds. But on The Simpsons, we had the episode where we had the glove slap, where Homer is challenging everyone to a duel in town by slapping them with his glove, which he has removed.
Right. So in this case, the authors suggest that their hypothesis is that over time, this familiar, highly salient activity of taking off a glove to demand a duel could be abbreviated to a simple gesture of just biting your thumb to show scorn or disrespect, whether or not you're actually wearing a glove. They do say they could find no direct evidence supporting this hypothesis, though it does fit well with the observation that the gesture mostly fell into disuse when dueling disappeared as a legitimate way of settling beef. So anyway, I think interesting question on its own, but I couldn't really find that this much informs Finn McCool.
Right, right. And I think that's one of the things that makes the thumb of knowledge here so fascinating is that it does, to a certain extent, feel like kind of an island in mythology. Like it's something that, it's not like there's something universal about heroes biting or sucking their thumb or placing their thumb in their mouth. But we'll get into some of the connections that are in place in a bit here. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today.
A-S-T-E-P-R-O, allergy.com. Astepro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The next question is, of course, well, why? What's the story? There's got to be a story. There's always a story behind why something is the way it is in mythology. And the main origin story for the miraculous thumb of Finn McCool is the Salmon of Knowledge. Salmon is in the fish, the delicious fish we're familiar with. And McKillop points out that, okay, in addition to this, the salmon has plenty of mystical connotations, in part due to its observed leaping out of the water. So it wasn't a stretch to think there might be something magical about a salmon. It's not like an inherently secular animal or mundane animal. It is one that that already has all these various mystical connotations. And so it makes sense that it might play into such a story.
Rob, can I reveal, though, when I was trying to see, okay, are there other magical salmon out there? So I Googled the phrase magical salmon, and the first result is, of course, Chef Paul Prudhomme's Salmon Magic Seasoning Blend.
There you go. I'm sure it was a magical recipe that he earned by catching a magical fish, because that's basically what we have going on here. So the story goes that you have a druid by the name of Finnegas who lives on the banks of a river, and he has long waited for and intends to catch the salmon of knowledge. There are other versions of the story that say that he's camping out at a waterfall, or that there's some sort of a, you know, some sort of an underground reservoir sort of situation going on. But the idea is that at some point this marvelous salmon is going to present itself, and if the druid can catch it, he can eat it, and he can gain all of that wonderful wisdom for himself.
Now, is it ever explained how he knows that the salmon of knowledge will give him all this wisdom, or is that just it's just something he knows?
Well, there are a few different. There's at least one really good story behind this, and this is an account mentioned by Patricia Monaghan in Celtic Mythology and Folklore. According to this author, the fish is sometimes identified as Fintan, a bard who lived many lifetimes and many incarnations. Thus, he has all of this accumulated knowledge. And in this incarnation, he just happens to be a salmon. And so I guess, you know, through the druidic arts, this particular druid knows, hey, I can catch him this time. And if I eat him, I'll gain all of that knowledge. So it makes sense.
Oh, it's literally that I'm going to eat your brains and gain your knowledge. Logic.
Right. Well, you know, but maybe not the brains, maybe just all that delicious I'm not sure if you have to eat like absolutely all of the fish, or you have to eat the brain, but you're already cooking a salmon, so you might as well make a meal out of it. I don't know. I guess as we're about to learn, it's not just the brains, and in fact, it may be a little more subtle than that. Because what apparently happens is the druid finally succeeds in catching it after waiting for it for 7 years. Which, incidentally, it's been 7 years since Finn McCool was born, and 7-year-old Finn McCool is hanging out there at the druid camp with him, and you know, he's shadowing him. You know, as you do. And so Finnegas, he's caught the salmon. He's overjoyed. So he starts cooking the salmon, puts it on a spit. It's roasting there. And Finn's trying to help out, and he accidentally burns his thumb on the cooking fish. And what does he do? What do you do when your thumb is burnt? Well, you immediately seek to soothe that pain by thrusting your thumb into your mouth. And Finn does just this. And when he does, he inherits the power of the salmon before the old druid even gets a shot at it.
So it's the oil from the salmon that contains the knowledge. It's not eat your brains and gain your knowledge. It's eat your omega-3s and gain your knowledge.
Right, right. Now, in some variations, however, he's said to gain the power of divination by eating magical hazelnuts, or he gains it from the salmon because the salmon ate magical hazelnuts. There's also one version in which he enters a fairy mound. Fairy mounds are these circular ancient dwellings, you know, from ancient Ireland that were later associated with supernatural tales and, you know, stuff like the Tuatha De Dananann. And so anyway, he enters a fairy ground. He gains the magical ability from three fairy women he encounters there. But then as he's leaving, he accidentally smashes his thumb in the door of the fairy mound.
Ooh.
But it seems like the fish version of the story, the salmon of knowledge, is the primary tale. It's the most popular. Now, it's often stated that it's not just putting the thumb in his mouth that sets off the divination trance, but that Finn also has to recite a kind of poetic chanting incantation called the, I'm probably pronouncing this wrong, but the Tinim Ladia Leda. This also may have some connection to hazelnuts, according to MacKillop in the Dictionary of Celtic Mythology. MacKillop adds that the thumb allowed him to enter, quote, and I love this, an altered visionary state in which he could see past, present, and future.
In which he could see present. Wow. I mean, that is a real... Well, maybe it means he could see all of the
yes.
Things that are not present with him at the present.
Or to see the present clearly. I don't know.
Mm.
There's another interesting wrinkle here. The Celtic languages and literature professor Patrick K. Ford suggests that one connection here may be that the old Irish word for thumb was ordu, which may also signify a morsel. Particularly a morsel of meat that you would, you know, consume. Mm-hmm. And MacKillop points out that that the consumption of a morsel of magical flesh is a common folkloric motif. So if I'm to understand this correctly, The interpretation would mean that Finn's morsel slash thumb becomes the sacred flesh by coming into burning contact with the cooking sacred fish of the Salmon of Wisdom.
But is it also suggesting that there may possibly have been the kind of semantic contagion in the evolution of this story, where originally the story was about eating a magical morsel of meat, but because you can use the same word for morsel of meat and thumb, that it came to represent a thumb in later tellings?
Yeah, that's absolutely the sense I'm getting from this. Yeah, so we have semantics and linguistic shift going on here. In addition to just a cool story of magic fish consumption.
Oh, this is great, because I'm imagining other variations of that kind of evolution of a story, like the thumb slash morsel makes sense, because like a little morsel of meat that might be about the size of your thumb. But there are other ways that we use body parts to measure quantities in reality. Like I'm thinking of people who would say, hey, I want 2 fingers of whiskey in the glass.
Yeah, yeah.
So you could have a story about somebody who drinks a magical draft of something. They get 2 fingers of it. But then in later tellings, it gets confused. And it's like, well, yeah, they drank their own fingers and then they gained this power.
Yeah, you could have like a sort of a Popeye-esque character. If he sticks 2 fingers in his mouth, then he gets all riled up and is ready to fight. Puts him into a drunken brawling state. So as we'll discuss, the thumb pops up in a few other places, but it's largely thought to be quite emblematic of Finn McCool, his only real defining feature in iconography. I think sometimes there are hounds or dogs that are associated with Finn McCool. But the thumb especially is something where, if you know, historians and art historians are looking at various images, if they see the thumb being poked towards the mouth, they can generally say with some certainty that this must be Finn McCool. And I haven't found an example of this online or in the books I was looking at, but apparently many Celtic crosses have various figures in the design, and sometimes you'll see this thumb brandishing Finn McCool character pop up, or it's assumed that it's Finn McCool, because who else would it be? So if you can't imagine what a Celtic cross tends to look like, they tend to be a cruciform shape, but then with all of these kind of compartments for further illustrations and symbols.
Now, how is it the thumb is usually emphasized in this iconography? Is it like glowing or something, or is he sucking it? Is it in his mouth?
Like I say, I couldn't find a direct example of this that stood out to me, but they're going to be smaller figures, and I don't think it's going to be necessarily obvious that like the thumb is glowing or anything, but just by virtue of having some sort of emphasis on the thumb and a visible thumb or even a thumb in the mouth, it's going to be pretty obvious that it's Finn McCool.
Now, this is not related to the thumb, but just as a quick side note, you mentioned that some stories of Finn McCool emphasize his dogs. I was reading a few of those. There are actually some really great dog buddy legends of Finn, and one of them is about how he gains a wife who is a person who, or I think she's like a fairy. But in any case, she's transformed into a fawn by an evil wizard, and he finds her by virtue of the fact that he's out with his hunting dogs, and when he comes across this fawn, his dogs don't go after the fawn and attack it, but instead settle down and cuddle with it. And so then he brings the fawn back with him to his castle, and once they arrive there, the fawn turns into this woman who becomes his wife. But then unfortunately, she is tricked and stolen away by the evil wizard again.
Interesting. Now, in terms of other accounts of thumbs in Celtic mythology, I did run across another interesting example, and this is from the 92 or 93 Nordic Celtic Legend Symposium, an article by Rianoc Ogan titled "Music Learned from the Fairies." And according to the author here, there are many tales of mortals learning the music of fairy folk, music from beyond our world, and usually they learn it by hearing it in just the right place at just the right time. Something like ancient ruins, strange rocks in the woods, the sort of place that fairies might appear or hang out. And such was also around the time of Samhain. Like this is a time of the year when the veil is thin between our world and the next. And there's at least one account in Celtic tradition of a man hearing fairy music. He hears it in the woods or wherever. And what does he do? He sticks his thumb in his mouth whilst hearing the music. And as a result, he remembered the music. And of course, this calls to mind Finn McCool.
Interesting. I mean, what does that suggest about our intuitions about the power of sucking a thumb? That it, like, I don't know what that means. that it has some kind of grounding power, that it can like cause you to sort of like hold fast against maybe currents of magic or forgetfulness that would otherwise wash away the memory.
Well, this is a great question, because I guess on one hand, let's go ahead and assume that sticking your thumb in your mouth actually doesn't have any effect on your memory or your stress level or anything like that. It does make you wonder if there's something culturally in place where just the idea of sticking your thumb in your mouth is like a novel thing that is done that is associated with insight. I wonder if it is the kind of thing where you could stick your thumb in your mouth thinking about this tradition, and it would actually help you remember something better, because it's also like that thing I heard while I was sticking my thumb in my mouth.
Oh, that's interesting. In fact, that even connects to a mnemonic device I've heard of before, which is basically like if suddenly something happens and you want to remember it very well, you should do something really weird immediately so that you like form a link in your mind between that weird, memorable thing you did and whatever thing it is you're trying to remember.
Interesting. Now, of course, the thing is, when it comes to thumb sucking, it doesn't seem to be just a completely neutral gesture, if you will. And we actually have quite a lot of research out there on thumb sucking, particularly as it relates to children.
Right. So I was actually reading a brief article in a pediatric medicine journal reviewing the existing literature on thumb sucking as of 2008. So this article was called Thumb and Finger Sucking by Lynn Davidson in the journal Pediatrics in Review. Again, this was the year 2008. And a few major takeaways from this brief write-up. Number one is that different studies across time have found some different rates of the prevalence of thumb sucking or finger sucking. A lot of times these studies just lump thumb and finger sucking in together, so you're not necessarily getting a breakdown by which finger it is. But I think it is clear that thumbs are the most common finger for infants to suck. But older studies found rates in the range of 70 to 90% of children showing thumb or finger sucking behaviors. And more recent studies have found rates more like 30% by the end of the first year after birth, along with 40% using a pacifier. Though with that 30-40%, I don't know if that's an either-or situation or an and situation. Do some children suck thumb and a pacifier? I'm not sure.
I don't have a lot of direct experience with that. But I mean, I guess in some cases you're going to have a situation where the child is gravitating towards sucking on digits, and you want to get a pacifier in there instead. And you're like, here, use this instead.
Anyway, there's some variations on these rates within the first few years of life, but Davidson writes that by the time most children reach the age of four, these rates have gone way down on average. Only 12% of children in one study sucked a finger, including a thumb, by the age of four, and pacifier use had gone down to 4% by that time. Now, here's something I thought was interesting. Apparently, during the first few months of life, infants are most likely to suck their thumbs during sleep, but by the end of the first year, more infants do it while awake. There were no differences in rates of thumb sucking prevalence by sex, and I thought this was interesting. Up to 50% of children who suck their thumbs or fingers also tend to hold a special object while doing so.
This is sort of the classic. I've sucked my thumb or my fingers, and I have to hold on to a special blanket or a special stuffy, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Now, there have been a number of historical explanations for thumb sucking. One that must be cited, unfortunately, is Freud. Freud, being Freud, believed it to be an expression of what he called, quote, infantile sexuality. and that when it persisted beyond infancy, it was a symptom of emotional disturbance. Obviously, Freudianism held a lot of sway for a while, despite it being profoundly weird and not actually being subject to empirical testing. But there are some more recent theories that seem better grounded in experimental research. And they generally suggest that thumb-sucking grows out of instinctual behaviors in infants, that sucking behaviors are a universal instinctual behavior in newborns that they use for breastfeeding or bottle feeding, and that after that, for some reason, in some children, this instinctual behavior continues beyond the point of nutritional relevance. And the instinctual behavior might be reinforced through conditioning, and in some cases it just continues with a substitute such as a thumb or a finger. I don't know if there is a good agreed upon answer as to why this reinforced behavior would be continued in some children but not others. Like, what makes the difference? I'm not sure. However, it might be informative to note that some studies have found that thumb sucking appears to be especially common when children are bored, tired, or anxious, and this suggests that it plays some kind of self-soothing role.
Yeah, and I was finding some evidence to back this up as well. There's a 2015 article published in Minerva Pediatrica that concluded that, quote, a thumb-sucking subject puts the thumb in the mouth to stimulate the nasal palatal receptors of trigeminus and obtain muscular balance and a release of physical and psychological tension. Now, that's also interesting when you think about we have Finn McCool doing this as an adult. You can certainly find adult thumb-suckers who speak to the calming effects of the practice. So I wonder if it is too much of a stretch to imagine an Irish warrior of old who, he's this wonderful hunter and warrior and all this, but he needs to calm down every now and then in this stressful role in society. And if you're going to ponder an important decision, you need to reach a place of relative peace, and perhaps placing his thumb inside of his mouth allows him to do so. And maybe you end up seeing the creation of magical explanations for what's going on here, as opposed to just saying, well, he never quite stopped sucking his thumb when he's nervous or stressed.
Oh, man, that would be an amazing origin story. Yeah, so it begins with this beast of a warrior, great hunter, blow the hunting horn, I will defend the shores of Ireland, but I also suck my thumb. And people are like, why is he sucking his thumb? And somebody else is like, well, it's what he does when he needs to, see into the future.
Yeah.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, another possible connection I was thinking about, a related connection anyway, sometimes there's more stress placed on the idea that Finn is placing his thumb behind his upper teeth. And, of course, thumb sucking itself impacts the palate. I was reminded of traditions in meditation that you encounter in which one is asked to hold the tip of one's tongue to the roof of the mouth. Sometimes this is described in terms of, you know, of course, bodily energy flow. Other times it's just being a way of altering the flow of saliva in the mouth, though it is sometimes described as a way of eliminating negative thoughts or even a way of sort of weeding out speech-based thoughts.
Well, and I'd wonder if, you know, any kind of meditative practice that involves unusual activities with the body is essentially just trying to direct your concentration away from the sort of default mode flow of thoughts that arise normally. If you're thinking about doing a sort of strange repetitive action with your body, you're probably less inclined to start thinking about, oh man, next Thursday, I really...
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like that is... I couldn't find any like real research on this, and perhaps I'm missing something, but... This seems plausible to me. Like if there was some sort of like ritual, we see in meditation, this is a ritual touching of something to the roof of your mouth that is then associated with some degree of anxiety relief and some degree of relaxation. We see some evidence to support the idea that that thumb sucking itself can reduce anxiety. And then we have this idea, too, that just sort of novel behaviors and rituals of relaxation, rituals of grounding can very much be helpful. I'm not advising anybody to take up sucking of the thumb as a way to try and find balance or to see into the future. But I feel like there's some interesting leads here to potentially pull on to sort of try and make sense of where this may come from and how such a at the very least such a myth comes together, but also the possibility that this is something that could have been practiced to some limited degree in Ireland of old.
Yeah. Also, another note. Yes, we're not encouraging thumb sucking for adults, especially because that can cause dental problems if you're doing chronic thumb sucking after the baby teeth have been replaced.
Yeah, that's of course the prime reason that that adults discourage the act and want to wean kids away from the sucking of fingers and thumbs, because yeah, once the baby teeth are gone, you got the adult teeth going in. You can jack up those adult teeth by continually pressing the thumb up there into the palate.
It seems like the methods used to discourage thumb sucking and train children not to do it have become more humane over time, because I was reading about some of the older methods people used to try to, you know, get their kid to get the thumb out of the mouth. And it was brutal. Like, one was about these ideas of having the sharp implements put on the backs of the teeth that would like cause pain in the thumb. Have you read about this?
Yeah. I think I've heard about that before. Obviously that does not sound good.
Or, of course, putting noxious chemicals or something on the thumb. Yeah, I think people have better methods now.
Yeah. Now, one of the interesting things, we talked about this idea of the thumb sucking being, the thumb in the mouth being kind of an island for this mythology of Finn McCool. And certainly, again, it is a defining one of the defining factors of this particular hero. But you do see thumb sucking, thumb in the mouth motifs popping up with some other heroes, particularly a few examples that have come to mind include Sigurd, the hero. There actually, I saw an image of him that it's like a carving, and you see him with thumb in the mouth. So that seems to be very much related to what we're looking at here. Another hero that we see lined up with the thumb is Taliesin. So there seems to be some connection between Finn McCool and these heroes as well.
Yeah, MacKillop notes in his book that there was a controversial suggestion by Robert Graves that that Heracles or Hercules, the Greek hero, was associated with the thumb in the same way that Achilles is associated with the heel, kind of these body parts that are emblematic of the person. But MacKillop brings that association up specifically in the context of it being kind of doubtful.
Now, outside of these three heroes, I wasn't really finding much that even resembled Finn McCool. But there is an interesting thumb sucking bit of myth making that pops up in Hindu traditions in the Hindu epic the Mahabharata. There's the story of King Yuvanashva, who apparently has trouble conceiving a child with any of his concubines, and so he winds up drinking a magic potion that makes him pregnant. So when this occurs, he realizes, well, there are some additional problems now that I have to deal with. So he turns to the divine physicians, and they cut open his thigh so that he can actually give birth to the baby. But then, how is he to nourish the child? Well, then we have Indra, the king of devas, to cut open his thumb. And this allows milk to leak forth from the thumb so that he can nurse his infant son in this manner. And this is why the story goes that babies sometimes suck their thumbs.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah. No direct connection between this and Finn McCool, but just another kind of cool thumb-sucking mythology to reference here.
The more I think about the idea of a thumb-sucking warrior action hero, the more I love it. Like, I want to see a movie like this. Or it doesn't have to be thumb-sucking. It could also be, your great warrior, great swinger of the sword, like, has a blankie.
Yeah. I mean, we had, let's see, who is the Telly Savalas character? Was it Kolchak? Kojak, that had the sucker. Like, that was his whole thing, right?
Oh, lollipops?
Lollipop, yeah. That's not too far removed from it.
I cannot do detective until I get my lolly.
Yes.
Well, Rob, I have greatly enjoyed this journey into Finn McCool.
Yeah, this one has been a lot of fun. Like I say, I wasn't super familiar with Finn McCool prior to this, and I certainly had somehow skipped over or forgotten anything about the thumb of knowledge. So this was a fun journey into Irish mythology. Always fun to do that around this time of year.
You know, on previous episodes of the show, we have talked about our love for the Time Life Enchanted World books that were fabulously advertised on TV commercials with Vincent Price, where, you know, I love to curl up with a good book. Did his eyes glow green in those commercials? I think so.
They may have.
Well, a couple of the volumes of the Time Life Enchanted World have stories of Finn McCool, and they're, you know what, I gotta say, by and large, those books are really good. They're good syntheses of their sources and pretty well written, much better than you would expect for something that was advertised on TV that way.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm actually reading through the Dragon volume from that collection right now with my son. And there are some sections of it that I feel like are a little wordier than they need to be. Mm-hmm. But we're having a lot of fun with it. You have the longer sections, the shorter sections. You have this wonderful mix of original artwork as well as traditional artwork mm-hmm. to illustrate these tales. So they're a lot of fun. Do you have them all, Joe?
It was a wonderful gift from my wife. Rachel got me the complete Time Life Enchanted World collection.
Oh, nice. It's something like 20 something volumes all told, right?
That might be about right. I haven't read them all yet. So the stories about Finn McCool are in the ones called Acts of Valor, or maybe Tales of Valor. This is the one with Valor in the title, and then the one called Fabled Lands.
Yeah. Okay. I have one of those, but not the other. For the longest, I kind of assumed that I had the full collection that had been gifted to me from an aunt when I was a child. But I've come to realize, I don't have them all. So, just the other day as we were recording this, which ones do I not have that I really should have? And I noticed that I had two of the black books, but not the third. So I immediately had to order that one up. One of the great things about these books is that I guess they were just so mass produced. You can pick these volumes up for reasonable sums. Sometimes you'll find one that's even like dirt cheap. So there's plenty of Enchanted World to go around if anyone's interested.
I'm incredibly proud of my Enchanted World collection. It's a treasure.
All right. Well, we're going to go ahead and close it out here. And I guess we wish everybody a St. Patrick's Day while we're at it. But we'd love to hear from everyone out there. We'd love to hear from Irish folk and non-Irish folk alike regarding these myths, these tales, thumbs in the mouth, thumb sucking in general, or even just a Enchanted World book chat. What's your favorite volume? Did you have these growing up, or did you just want them? Have you rectified this in your adult life, etc.? Just let us know. We'd love to hear from you. In the meantime, you can find core episodes of Stuff to Blow Your Mind on Tuesdays and Thursdays in the Stuff to Blow Your Mind podcast feed. On Mondays, we do listener mail. On Wednesdays, we do an artifact or a monster fact. The one we did this week is also Irish themed. And then on Fridays, we set most serious matters aside and we just talk about a strange film.
Huge thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer, Seth Nicholas Johnson. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.